2002, three Stanford psychologists performed an experiment to study delayed gratification in children. It's often called the marshmallow experiment. Have you ever heard of it? Okay, here are the basics. They showed a bunch of preschoolers a marshmallow and a pretzel, and they said, pick your favorite treat. Then they put each child in a room on his own and said, we're going to leave the room now, and if you ring this bell, we'll come back. But if you wait until we return on our own, if you don't ring the bell, then you will get your preferred treat when we return. The test was to see if the kids could wait just 15 minutes before getting too bored or too antsy when left on their own. Here are two things they learned from this experiment, because they broke the children into different groups. So each child received his or her own specific instructions based on what group they were in. So all the kids were told, we will come back if you ring the bell. So no one was, you know, traumatized from this experiment. But some groups were given something to do while they waited, and some weren't. So can you guess which groups did better at the waiting? Yeah, the ones who had something to do. You're all very smart. Now, the experimenters also had a group of kids who were not shown or promised any treat. The instructions were just, hey, we'll be back in a few minutes, but if you need us sooner, ring the bell. Those children had no expectation of reward, and they performed the worst of all the children. So what this experiment revealed about delayed gratification is that it's easier when there's an expectation of reward and something to do in the meantime. Expectation of reward and something to do in the meantime. I first heard about this experiment when I nannied for an Ivy League family that was really into this kind of stuff. They actually performed the marshmallow experiment on their own children. Think of that what you will. But it came to mind again this week as I was reflecting on our gospel reading, in which Jesus speaks of a promised reward and instructions for what to do while we wait for it. Let me read you again from Luke chapter 12. Jesus said, stay dressed for action and keep your lamps burning. Blessed are those servants whom the master finds awake when he comes. Truly, I say to you, the master himself will dress for service and have them recline at table, and he will come and serve them. Now, God is not a psychologist performing experiments on us, because these terms are for all people. Okay, there are no control groups in the gospel, right? The invitation to follow Jesus and to seek the kingdom is for everyone. But I think what science can reveal is that actually we are wired for this kind of instruction. In telling us that the master will return and to stay busy in the meantime, because when he returns, he is eager to celebrate our faithfulness. In telling us these things up front, Jesus is actually giving us our best possible chance for success. Does that make sense? God is not a psychologist, but we are children. The Bible tells us that straight up. And we need to know that he is returning and that he rewards those who seek him. That's how Hebrews 11 puts it. Now, fast forward to our second gospel reading, the second bit that Michael read today, which is from Luke chapter 13. This gives us some insight as to why this kind of working and waiting can still feel so hard, even if we believe there's a reward at the end. And it has to do with the invisibility, the hiddenness of these realities that we're supposedly ordering our lives around. So listen to Jesus' words from Luke 13 again. The kingdom of God is like a mustard seed that a man took and sowed in his garden, and it grew and became a tree, and the birds of the air made nests in its branches. Or it's like leaven that a woman took and hid in 3 measures of flour until it was all leavened. So there's a reward, there's a kingdom, a city with foundations, as Hebrews puts it, a feast to which we'll be invited, but we can't see any of it yet. We get glimpses now and again. We have an inkling that it's real and that it's coming, and we have the stories of those who've gone before us, but right now it's largely obscured from our view, like a seed buried in the ground. The kingdom is real, but right now we apprehend it by faith, not by sight. That's Hebrews 11 again. But then, in addition to this invisible treasure for which we wait, the work that we're given to do in the meantime sometimes also can feel invisible, right? Fruitless, futile, maybe even maddening. Because notice we are not told, as followers of Jesus, to just entertain ourselves while we wait. Jesus didn't say, just distract yourself from the difficulty of life, however you can until I come. No, we are told to defer the short-term gratification of building wealth and insulating ourselves from present difficulties. That's what we heard about last week in Luke 11. We're told to forego worldly diversions and instead to stay alert, ready for action in that kingdom that we can't see. We're told to be attentive to a master who, in a very real way, isn't even here right now. I mean, he's here by the Spirit and in the church, of course, but we can't see or hear him in the ways we would like to, if we're honest. My 3-year-old is honest, and this is what she tells me. At bedtime, when she's scared, she'll say, Mom, if God is with me, why can't I see him? Why can't I feel him? Do you relate to that? I do. I don't admit it as readily as she does. And that's part of the challenge of our faith. It's faith. It's participation in something that for now is invisible. It's hidden from our view. And this is also why the world often calls us crazy. Because we're the people building an ark, a boat, in the middle of a desert. We're the people restraining our passions in an age of self-gratification. We're the people waiting on a marshmallow that a large portion of society would say doesn't actually exist. Right? We're the pie in the sky people. But our readings today encourage us to persevere in this long, sometimes crazy-making wait for God's kingdom to reveal itself to us and to the world. Specifically, they tell us a little bit more about how the kingdom is hidden, like in what way it's currently invisible. But then second, they tell us a bit more about how to wait and work for its coming. So that's what I want to reflect on a bit more now, how the kingdom is hidden and how to work and wait for its coming. So beginning with how it's hidden. We're in a sermon series right now called Kingdom Windows. And today, our window is a little bit funny because when we look through it, what we see is nothing. We see invisibility. The kingdom of heaven is like a seed that a man hid in his garden, or a bit of leaven that a woman mixed in with her flour. These two little illustrations that Jesus gives us, they tell us something about how the kingdom is hidden. And I think this information can really help us. They help us to understand the kingdom is invisible in two ways. It's hidden spatially, meaning it's here now, but it's obscured from our view. But it's also hidden temporally. It's a future reality that will reveal itself over time. Here's how this can help us. Knowing that the kingdom is here now, though hidden, reminds us that there is more happening at any given time than meets the eye. So you can't see the leaven in the dough right now, but it's there. You can't see how God is present in a situation in your life or in a relationship, but he is. You can't see because right now so much of God's work in and among us is invisible. We need to hold on to that truth because it can encourage us in our hidden, mundane, seemingly futile work that we're doing while we wait for Jesus to return. Here's one very basic but very important example of this. Prayer. It's the kind of work we're all called to do, but we often struggle with, right? Because we can't tell if it's actually working. Prayer is a participation with God in the hidden, invisible work of the kingdom. And for those of us who are results-oriented, prayer can feel like a really big waste of time because we can't see whether it's doing anything. Well, I want to tell you about my oldest brother. He's a brilliant man, very well read. Pick any topic and he will gladly debate you on it, and he'll probably win. Do you know anyone like this? Anyway, at some point in my brother's life, his name is Josh, he decided that God wasn't real and that Christianity was a lie. And for 10 years, he was a devout atheist. He pitied Christians and their moral constraints and their pie in the sky. And because he is who he is, nobody in my family tried to argue with him about it. Because, you know, he'd heard all the arguments and he'd read all the books, and it was true, he had. But about 2 years ago, out of the blue, he called me. And he said, "Hannah, I don't know how to tell you this, but the strangest thing has happened to me. I was invited to church, listen to this, by another atheist friend of mine, okay, who decided that he wanted to try church, and he asked me to come because he knew I could explain the moves to him, like when to sit, when to stand, how to use the book. So I went to church with my atheist friend, didn't want to be there, didn't believe a word of what was being said, had no logical arguments that persuaded me, but by the end of that church service, I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that God was real and that he loved me. And I've come back to my faith." That was 2 years ago. And to me, this was about as big a surprise as hearing that someone had been raised from the dead. I mean, it was truly a miracle in our family. And I asked my brother, I said, "You know, what do you think changed? Or what do you think made this possible?" And he said, "The only explanation I can give is that people never stopped praying for me." That's what prayer is like. For 10 years, you can't see any fruit. You have no idea if anything is changing. Then all of a sudden, one Sunday morning, a person's life is forever altered. Because the kingdom and its king, right now, they're invisible to us. They are at work in the places we can't see or even access, places like someone's heart. But we are called to participate in that work by faith. Now, that's a really good example of prayer because it relates to the second way that the kingdom is hidden from us. So it's hidden spatially, but it's also hidden temporally. It's something that's happening over time. God was at work in my brother, not just in a way we couldn't see at the time, but also over a long period of time, right? 10 years. The kingdom is like a seed that will grow into a tree. I am not a gardener. Anyone who has been to my house and has seen my front yard would know this. They say someone has a green thumb. I like to say that I have a brown thumb, that I'm really good at killing plants. But I'm slowly gaining interest, and I'm also becoming more and more embarrassed the longer that people come to my house and walk through my front yard. So I recently asked Amy Grady, who is a master gardener, to come over and just give me some tips, like, where do I even start with this yard, okay? And I wrote down everything she said, and as I was doing it, I was thinking, yep, this is why I don't like gardening, because it is so sinking slow. So I have to prune stuff now and make it look even uglier than it already does so that maybe in a year it will start growing the way I want it to. But I can't prune it now in the peak of summer because that will stress the plants too much. So I have to wait until fall to even start. Then I have to sit around and wait all winter long while everything goes dormant and then do even more stuff in the spring, like pull more things out of the ground, schlep around more dirt, really hard stuff. Then maybe in 2 years, my yard will start to look the way I want it to. Now, those of you who do this or who are good at it, you know that to really work and cultivate land takes even longer than I'm understanding at this point. But here's the thing. You can do slow work if you know it's working, right? You can till that field if you know eventually it will be full of food to feed your family. That is the promise of the kingdom. We don't get to predict exactly what the harvest will be or exactly when we receive it, but we do know that a harvest is coming. This is what Paul said in his letter to the Galatians. He said, "Friends, let us not grow weary while doing good, for we know that in due season we will reap if we do not give up." Right now, the work in front of us is the slow, invisible work of planting seeds in the ground and waiting for them to grow. The work in front of us now is like pouring water on a pile of dirt and hoping that something is happening under there where we can't see it. And what I'm describing is the work of loving our neighbors, praying for our children, having integrity at our jobs, repenting of our pride, day in and day out, again and again and again. Right? It's staying alert and attentive in a thousand small ways to a kingdom that we can't see. We don't get to predict the harvest that it will yield, and we may not even see that harvest in our lifetimes, but we can trust that the work is not in vain. I want to tell you about one other brother of mine who came to mind as I wrote this. So my oldest brother, Josh, is the one who had this crisis of faith and came back to Jesus after 10 years. My youngest brother, Noah, also had a crisis of faith at one point in his life, and he also had people praying for him faithfully. Josh is still with us. Noah is not. He took his own life 3 weeks after his 21st birthday. And I share that with you to say that sometimes our prayers are very clearly not answered in the way that we hope or expect. Sometimes the harvest we are working for is not the harvest we reap in the short term. But as citizens of a kingdom that is coming, we have hope that the short term isn't all there is. There is a future harvest still coming that no eye has yet seen, that none of us will see until we see him, Jesus Christ. And I do believe on that day, my hope that Noah will be able to receive then what he couldn't, for some reason, receive on earth. And that every seed of prayer and kindness and love that was planted in his life will then nourish and delight him. Friends, nothing that is sown for the kingdom will be wasted. Nothing. Do you believe that? Lord, help us to believe that, and help us to act on that belief. This leads to my last point, which is really just the conclusion. We've seen how the kingdom is hidden, and now we see how to work while we wait. Just simply this: we work with confidence. We work and we wait with confidence because Jesus has already shown us how this whole project will end. He will return, that his promises are true, that his kingdom is real and it is coming. So don't be afraid to give yourself to that kingdom and to its work, even though you can't see it. Even if at times it feels empty or fruitless, like a pie in the sky. Don't be afraid to give yourself to it, even if you feel like you're failing at it. Because the truth is, you will fail at it. Many times, but he won't. He has already given us the kingdom, and he is eager to reward our participation in it, eager to show us those tiny seeds that we planted or watered, to show us how they've grown into something that now we can't even imagine. This is where we started, right? With Jesus' invitation to be blessed. I'll read it to you again. "Blessed are those servants whom the master finds awake when he comes. Truly, I say to you, the master himself will dress for service and have them recline at table, and he will come and serve them." So, even if you can't be confident in your work, be confident in him. Be confident that he is at work in ways you can't see, and that he will continue that work long after you and I might be tempted to give up on it. Be confident that there is a table being prepared for us, a city with foundations.
One day he will bring it to us.
May he find us awake when he comes. Amen.